Good Vach. This is Yisachar Wartel, and we are now at the Aseret HaDibro. That's right, the first Aseret HaDibro, which is Parshat Yitro. Here we are at 5782, and once again, we're back almost halfway through Shemot. It's hard to believe it. Before I get started, once again, this year is sponsored in memory of Sarah Balad Bat Menachem Mendel. May her neshama have an aliyah. Now, I don't believe I've told this story before, and I'm not going to get into all the details, but I started writing Divrei Torah essentially back when I was in yeshiva, which was actually after college, but I had started writing Divrei Torah as a summary back when I was at NCSY. But when I was in yeshiva, again, after college, I started writing down different chidushim that I was having or that I've heard from other people, combination. Sometimes one led to another. And this is one example. This is largely going to be a dvar that I heard from Rav Chanoch Waxman, who was one of my rebbeim in yeshiva. And I wanted to, you know, in a certain sense, explain what he said with some other touches and some other pieces that I've heard as well. So in this week's parsha, we have quite possibly the most fundamental psukim in the entire Torah, which are the Aseret HaDibro, the Ten Commandments. And this leads into next week's parsha of Mishpatim, which of course gets to an innumerable amount of, I mean, it's not really innumerable because you can count them, but effectively an enormous amount of halachot, a listing of many of the Torah's laws, and as many commentary explained, are actually alluded to, and many of them hidden within the Aseret HaDibro. However, there's actually an interesting interruption between these two sections. If you've gone through this week's Parsha, at the end of this week's Parsha, right, it seems very, very strange, right? It has the Aseret HaDibro, lists them out, explains what happened, they leave the mountain, and it should just go right into Mishpatim and go, and let's just start listing the laws. Instead, it gets into this peculiar topic, or seemingly peculiar topic, of the Mizbeach, and that you can't use metal objects to hew the stones on Mizbeach. Like, why are these laws about the altar, about the Mizbeach, just seemingly randomly inserted there? Right? Hashem declares that any private altar made to him, which of course is no longer allowed, must be made only of dirt or unhewn stones. And even the ones that were used in the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash had to be done with unhewn stones. They could not be used with metal, as metal was seen as a sign of violence and war for these particular purposes. So they actually used the secretions of the Shamir worm, which is kind of like an acidic substance that would basically cut away the stones to be able to make them. Now, without getting into all the details of these halachos and when they're applicable, when they're not, etc., it nevertheless seems very out of place, but it's actually coming to teach us something even more important, possibly, than the laws that are to follow. The Rashbam explained that a mizbeach, an altar, must be made of dirt to avoid the possibility of engraving images on them. Interesting. And even if one desires to make a more permanent altar, and therefore does so out of stones, like the ones in the Mizbeach and the Beit HaMikdash, these stones must have never been shaped or cut with any specific utensil, such as a metal utensil. And this is also to deny the possibility of engraved imagery, as well as the violence thing that I mentioned. Now, the Torah explains that Har Sinai Bnei Israel saw the voice of Hashem, right? Many explanations as to what that means. They did not see something physical, but rather they saw or comprehended something which was intangible. Right? And this was to teach that it is indeed possible to perceive Hashem not through sight or any other physical sense, those which were often used by Avodah Zarah, right? They would see the idol, they would taste certain foods, sometimes they would have incense, certain smells like you even have in certain Eastern cultures nowadays, right? Rather, somebody perceives Hashem through his actions, his name, and by hearing his words, right? The way Hashem interacts with his creations, the way Hashem interacts with nature, each individual person, the way Hashem gives names to people, the intricate meanings and symbolisms hidden in his names, such as Yud Kei Vav Kei and other names, and also hearing his words at Har Sinai, and also echoed through the prophets and Ruach HaKodesh and other means. However, the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban perceived this commandment of not engraving an altar as not a prevention specifically of foreign worship, but the utilization or attempt to create an intermediary, although those two were actually go hand in hand, as oftentimes, you know, deities were initially constructed as intermediaries. But anyway, after witnessing the Aseret HaDibro being given, the Jewish people were afraid and insecure for a variety of different reasons, and therefore heavily relied on Moshe as an intermediary between Hashem, right? As we see, this actually wound up, unfortunately, leading to the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. So they were so incredibly reliant on him, they felt they needed something else. And the only reason, in general, this was acceptable to utilize Moshe in this regard was because of Moshe's humility. Were it not for Moshe's humility and selflessness, and this constant emphasis that it was not his own powers, but that every single thing he was doing was Hashem and it's not his own, there would in fact be a concern of worshiping an intermediary that might take place, right? it's not really the same level, but you know, we sometimes are, you know, concerned about that when people sometimes worship Gedolim as opposed to seeing them as a means to get to Hashem. It's not so much that people can ever truly be an intermediary, but people can sometimes pray on your behalf, or sometimes are more attuned to you know, what Hashem is trying to tell you, etc. But to truly use a person as an intermediary is problematic, with the exception of Moshe Rabbeinu, and even then it has its limits. Right now, you know, we clearly see that Bnei Israel tried to make something, and, you know, regardless of what exactly they initially tried to do, their past, you know, and their knowledge that they acquired when living in Eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt, you know, came back and manifested itself with a golden calf. And therefore, Hashem stresses that the Mizbeach should be made of dirt, which represents lowness and humility, right? Or naturally shaped stones, which indicate purity and simplicity. Because if one keeps in mind, there's a lot of reasons that people can worship a Bodhisattva. And there's a lot of reasons people may want an intermediary. And sometimes it's for selfish reasons, sometimes it's for social reasons, and sometimes it can be for holy reasons, right? So in the case of the Chet Egel, people actually wanted it for holy reasons, but that was still problematic, right? Rather, you need to think about who Moshe was and his humility, right? You don't want something shiny and fancy like gold. They made a golden calf. Gold is radiant. It's shiny. Moshe, although he had, you know, he did have that glow in his face. That didn't happen initially, right? I mean, he was himself a humble human being, probably the most humble person who ever lived, right? So it was fitting for him to be as close to we could have as an intermediary to Hashem. Right, he was pure and simple in this regard. Right, that we can have an intricate relationship to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but if we use anything as a means, you know, I hate to use the word term intermediary again, but if you use anything as a conduit, anything physical certainly as a conduit to get to Hashem, whether it's a person or an object or anything like that. We run a real danger. So it should be something very, very simple so that you do not ever, ever get mistaken that you ever have any koach with that particular object itself and that it is not acting as an intermediary, but the relationship that you foster with Hashem, perhaps with the aid of this person, this gadol, or even sometimes an object like a sitter or a mezuzah or something like that, allows you to foster a better relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Not that this is actually functioning or this person is truly functioning as an intermediary, because that is at least some level of avodah zarah. And it's also not what Hashem wants, right? So Hashem commands, right, for both of these directives, right, whether you're making a dirt mizbeach or a stone mizbeach, ta'asuli, do for me, right? Why are you building the mizbeach? You're doing it for Hashem. You're doing it to serve Hashem. I mean, yes, you want a good place at Olam Haba too. But ultimately, the purpose is to worship and serve Hashem, right? You're not doing it for yourself. And therefore, if Hashem tells you a certain way you need to do it, there's no point in building an altar that's different than the way that Hashem tells you to do it, because Hashem is the one you're offering it to in the first place, right? So if you're going to build an altar to Hashem, then do it the right way, the way he commands. Once you realize this, then you can begin to learn the complexities of the many laws. You need to sometimes learn something very simple, right? People used to build bamas all the time, these dirt altars, or sometimes ones that are a combination of dirt and stone. They built them all the time before the Mishkan was established, or at least before the Beit HaMikdash was established. And it was very common. It was pretty simple. It was very simple to build, put up. And like, you could just simply offer, you know, whatever it is, right, whatever kind of carbon to Hashem. And, you know, but once you put those guidelines in place for something seemingly so simple, which might not be as simple as you think, then you can start learning all of the intricacies and complexities which are going about to come about in next week's parsha, which is Parsha Mishpatim. So again, sometimes you have to make sure that your relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is grounded and firm, and that you're not using anything truly external to influence your relationship, but that there's an essence of purity and trueness that's there. And then you can really get into a true lumdus and really get into all the details, and hopefully more and more things will fall into place, and you'll be able to and then build a deeper relationship with all of the Torah that you're learning as you're learning it. So wishing you all Shabbat Shalom.